Our sun is headed into solar maximum, the period of greatest activity in its solar cycle. My name is Troy Klein, and welcome to the new podcast series called Space Weather Living History. During this series, you'll hear directly from the people who for years have been studying the evolution of space weather, how we make observations, and our capabilities to predict space weather events. Now, every 11 years on average, our sun reaches a peak period of activity called solar maximum. That's followed a few years later by a period of quiet called solar minimum. During solar maximum, there are many sunspots, solar flares, and coronal mass ejections, all of which can affect communications and technology here on Earth. Now, the energy from those solar blasts can disrupt radio communications, upset electrical power systems, damage satellites and change their orbits, cause navigational equipment to make mistakes, and even endanger astronauts walking in space. The effects from these solar storms can be far-reaching. In fact, they can have impacts throughout our entire solar system. These conditions are what we refer to as space weather. Sound exciting? Let's get right to the next interview.
My name is John Kappenman. I'm with Storm Analysis Consultants. I've been working on this problem of space weather and how it impacts electric power grids for about 37 years now. The work that I'm involved in now continues to be focused on what is the vulnerability of electric power grids, especially the U.S. Electric power grid, and also what things we can do to solve the problem that space weather causes to the electric power grid. Well, I certainly can talk about some of the specifics of what has occurred in this area. For example, I started work on this problem in 1977. At that time, we knew about the problem that these storms could cause to electric power grids. We still largely felt at that time that these were nuisance level problems as far as how they could impact electric power grid operations. The company that I worked with was a power company in northern Minnesota. We were building a long, high-voltage interconnection to Canada, so we felt we had to do a little bit of research at that time to try and understand the problems more fully. Me being the new guy in the engineering department, I ended up getting stuck doing that research, and here I am 37 years later, still trying to research this problem. Over that period of time, we have learned through studies as well as through painful experience that these severe geomagnetic storms could perhaps be the largest natural disaster that electric power grids could face, and by extension, perhaps the largest natural disaster that the country could face. So it has taken on a much more focused role, a much more important role in trying to understand these vulnerabilities, and actually the role has evolved to try and engineer solutions to reverse some of these vulnerabilities or engineer out some of the vulnerability that we have in the present day electric power grid. We have had some experience with modern day storms that give us a hint as to what could happen for a more severe storm. For example, there was an important storm back in March of 1989, March 13th and 14th, 1989. At that time, it had only been theoretically proposed by me and other research collaborators that such storms could cause a blackout of the power grid. And this March 1989 storm did, in fact, cause a blackout to a major portion of the North American power grid. The entire province of Quebec. And it came very close to precipitating a blackout that literally could have extended from the mid-Atlantic region of the U.S. all the way across to the Pacific Northwest. In addition, we learned for the first time during that March 1989 storm that large and difficult to replace electric equipment like transformers could be permanently damaged by the induced currents that these storms caused to flow in the electric grid. Since that March 1989 storm, we've done work to try and estimate more extreme storm scenarios. We had misestimated for many years, even following the March 1989 storm, how much more severe storms could be. And we now have a scientific understanding that tells us that in some of the most important aspects, that we could see storms that could have intensities 10 times larger than the March 1989 storm. Now, we already know the March 1989 storms caused some historic impacts to the electric grid. The things that we're concerned about with the reoccurrence of a very large storm would be that it would not only cause blackouts to major electric grids like the U.S. power grid, perhaps other economic developed countries around the world, but could also destroy enough equipment on those grids to perhaps greatly extend the blackout beyond just a matter of a few hours or a few days, perhaps into a blackout that could extend into months and perhaps years across very wide regions that these storms would occur over. In the case of the U.S., the analysis that I've done for the U.S., this could have enormous impacts across society. When you think about how electricity is used in our society, it is vital for things like being able to deliver potable water. You know, we would lose supplies of potable water within a matter of a few hours after a blackout occurred. The ability to treat and pump sewage. Perishable foods would be lost after about 12 hours. Perishable medications as well. If you think about perishable medications, in the U.S. alone, there's 1 million patients that need daily supplies of insulin to stay alive. So loss of that over a wide region could cause enormous risk and loss of life in this country from these sort of scenarios. When you look at everything else that society is dependent upon as far as electricity, within short period of time, you lose the ability to maintain transportation systems, the ability to pump fuels via pipelines and things like that is lost. Within a short period of time, perhaps a couple of days, the ability to maintain communication systems, telephones, and so forth will also be lost as they have backup battery and generation supply, but then they become logistically bounded because of loss of electricity and inability to refuel. So it becomes a situation that could place many millions of lives at risk in modern day society. We don't know of any preventative measures that have increased over time. The story in electric power grid vulnerability has actually been the opposite. We've grown more vulnerable over time, remarkably more vulnerable. You know, for example, when we had the large storm called the Carrington event in 1859, the only electrotechnology we had at that time was telegraph systems. The same is largely true for the major storm that occurred in May 1921. We were still very much at the state of infancy as far as electric power grids, communication systems, and that other sort of infrastructure that can couple with these disturbances in the magnetic field that are caused by these storms. Since the late 1950s to today, we have developed a high voltage network of transmission lines that span continents all over the world. These types of infrastructures are enormously well coupled to disturbances in the Earth's magnetic field, but we have been completely unaware that this was a threat environment that we needed to be concerned about. We have had no design code that has ever taken this sort of environmental threat into consideration in the design of electric power grids. And it has only been just this year that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission finally issued rules or regulations to the electric power industry to tell them to begin developing standards and design codes that take this threat into consideration. So we've got many decades increased vulnerability that we have to now try and figure out how to undo as we've greatly expanded this modern day infrastructure. While the NOAA and the Space Weather Prediction Center do issue notices, alerts, and warnings for geomagnetic storm activity, space weather activity, and so forth, this information is distributed to the electric power industry. And as I mentioned before, it's information that's passed along to the industry, but there has been very little done with that information other than to try and just, you know, heighten awareness, situational awareness that the storm is occurring, and it may explain some of the variations and disturbances that occur in the electric power grid. We now have regulations that will require U.S. electric utilities to develop operating standards that take these conditions into consideration. So they will be working to develop more formal operating procedures that they can adopt when these storms occur. The concern that I have, however, is that these operating procedures may not be at all adequate, especially adequate for the very largest storms that are likely to occur. We know these large storms have occurred before. You know, the physics of the sun, the physics of the Earth's magnetosphere has not changed. The physics of the electric power grid has changed in a very adverse way. And as a result, we know these large storms have the potential to create enormous widespread damage to the power grids. We really cannot do anything to prevent storms from occurring or prevent these storms from having these impacts on the power grid unless we take additional steps to re-engineer the power grid and try and block these flows of induced currents into the power grid that create all the problems. And that's a large part of the work that I'm continuing to focus on is methods and devices that we'll be able to use to block these geomagnetically induced currents. Well, that's true. You know, in fact, we've raised these questions with the White House task force looking at geomagnetic storms and pointed out to them that, you know, if we knew that a very large storm were to occur like next week, what is it that we could reasonably do to safeguard the country? You know, one of the scenarios would be to have the president issue an order to shut down the electric power grid. Well, that's not something we want to take lightly either, because even the shutdown of the electric power grid is a disaster for the country. You know, if you look at the blackout that occurred in August of 2003, that affected 60 million people in the country. That cost the economy about $10 billion in lost gross domestic product. Fortunately, we recovered from that in a matter of a couple of days. Shutting down the entire U.S. electric power grid would probably take, longer to recover from, perhaps a week or so. But at least we would have a power grid that we could bring back into service. If we allow the storm to occur and it causes the widespread damage that we think is possible, we know we do not have any of this equipment as spares that can be readily replaced. It could be as much as a decade to try and recover from that sort of scenario. And then, of course, you become concerned about the issues of what impact would that have to society, you know, widespread loss of water, foods, medications, ability to keep people warm and sheltered, transport, emergency provisions, things like that. We predicate all of our disaster recovery methods on being able to provide assistance from nearby unaffected regions. In the case of these space weather events, these are things that can have literally a continental laydown, a planetary laydown. We may not have nearby unaffected regions for some of the worst case scenarios that one could face. Well, actually, for the processes that we're concerned about, these are geomagnetic storm processes, and they usually tend to be more severe on the side away from the sun, the nighttime side of the Earth. Although we have seen some of these magnetic storm processes produce large impulsive disturbances into the day side regions as well. Typically, for a storm of the class that we're concerned about, this is something that is probably going to last a day or more. It is going to have a large number of intense substorm events that will occur over the course of that several day period. And it therefore has the potential to sweep across to most of the planet and produce impulsive disturbances that could be quite regionally intense for many, many areas of the country over the course of that storm. Well, I was one of the people that helped champion the current space weather warning satellite that we use, the ACE satellite. And with that satellite, it's positioned out at the L1 position in space. So it sees the incoming coronal mass ejection before it encounters the Earth's magnetic field. And, for the fastest moving events, it could probably give us at least a 10-minute warning before the CME first encountered the Earth's magnetic field. And then, of course, it would continue to provide status data on that CME over the course of its entire transit to Earth. And, it becomes an important input to simulation models that we have a capability to run to try and tell us what that CME means as far as the potential for storm severity. We'll certainly see typically a day in advance, something big that has happened on the surface of the sun, be able to see that it is something that looks like it's very well directed towards the Earth. But, you know, that's still, you know, not the same resolution of clarity of data as we would get from actually measuring the CME itself as it passes by the ACE satellite. We originally started this work in 1977, thinking it would be a rather small and simple problem to solve. Once we started getting into the research, though, it continued to be an ever-mushrooming set of problems that these storms presented. For example, I published a paper back in 1980 where we made the very meek one-sentence statement in that paper that we think there's a non-zero probability of future geomagnetic storms causing blackouts to power grids. Well, that did become reality in the March 1989 storm when the Quebec grid blacked out. We also didn't realize or didn't expect that large transformers could be damaged by this. So we were enormously surprised by the large power transformer that was damaged also during that March 1989 storm. We continue to have a situation, even in modern storms, where we often get greatly and unpleasantly surprised about how geomagnetic storms can impact electric power grids. You know, for example, we didn't realize that these storms could produce that same sort of damage even at very low latitude locations. The October 2003 storm ended up destroying 15 large transformers in the South Africa grid. They are at very low latitudes geomagnetically. It revealed to us that these sort of storms, especially if they were very large size, could truly have planet-wide impacts to modern-day power grids and therefore modern-day society. We've been blessed to have some wake-up calls provided to us without having to experience firsthand the full consequences of one of these really large storms. And that's what I try, that's the message I try to carry to people in my industry, in that we cannot afford to learn our lessons firsthand on this type of disaster, because its consequences could be so large that we may not, as a society, be able to easily recover from it. We learn, unfortunately, from natural disasters that occur in one region. You know, for example, most recent event I can think of or point to would be Hurricane Katrina. And then we work harder to prevent that sort of disaster from occurring in many other regions. This sort of disaster literally could cause unacceptable consequences over very, very large regions of our planet. And, you know, as a result, we wouldn't have the ability to understand the full potential of these consequences without suffering all of the consequences themselves. Or the full potential of these storms without suffering the consequences firsthand. And we know that, these storms have occurred before. They are certain to occur again. The only thing we don't know is exactly when they will occur.
I hope you enjoyed the Space Weather Living History podcast brought to you by NASA's Sun-Earth Days program. You can learn more about the Space Weather Living History Project on our website at sunearthday.nasa.gov. And don't forget to join our growing community of Facebook and Twitter fans for the latest information and facts about the new Sun Earth Day themes. For all other details about these programs, including information about our past Sun Earth Day's themes, be sure to visit our website at sunearthday.nasa.gov.
This is Troy Klein signing off.